You're listening to The Good.
Don't call me Paino.
The Bad.
Absolute.
And The Rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Hask. I don't know what that means.
Hello, everybody. Welcome once again to another episode of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby, brought to you by our good friends at City Index, the leading provider of spread betting, CFD and FX trading. We are back together again.
Yes, we are.
You're looking very well.
Thank
you. Tanned.
There's one point where I had some headphones on. I was DJing at Nikki Beach and the sun was reflecting through and it looked like a very thin straw in the sun, which it's
tumbleweed, somewhere.
Currently
say.
With that tan, I would describe it as like fescue from the golfing. You know, the
fescue
is what they describe the long grass on the golf
yes.
course.
Yes,
fescue just wafting in the wind.
Quite easy to find your ball and not too hard to hit it out.
Hey, we all have a bit of fucking chat. I mean, no, but I saw it and I couldn't. I honestly was like, right, I think it's time to get the old transplant, get it sorted.
Do you think you might go in for it?
Have you been in communications with a certain?
I haven't.
Let's call him. Schmillen Hartley.
Schmillen Schmartley. No, I haven't spent Schmillen recently.
His is coming through, actually.
Apparently,
his
is, yeah.
These look quite good.
Like, because it looked like
yeah,
stubble.
Like Stavros yeah. in no time.
Stubble in a post-field burn in a farm. But I think I will do that. But I'm very good, actually. Ibiza was fantastic.
Was it?
DJing at Ibiza Rocks, only for Craig David.
Opening party. do you think that's the worst thing about his career?
Yes. Yeah. Keith Lemon.
It's Keith Lemon
has basically apologised. Yeah, that part, I think because he... You know, it's obviously an extremely talented performer. Like, he DJs, raps, sings, and obviously has one of the best albums of all time, you know, Born to Do It. And then some guy has come up and vented a whole lot of things. I think that's partly why he moved to Miami. But really? Off the back of Miami, you know, the TS5 was the name of his building.
And he found some HGH. Massive.
Yeah, got absolutely, yeah, lean. And got the TS5 was his building in Miami. Started doing these kind of TS5 parties. And then that's what built the brand. But I would never dare... do that, and I sort of have dismissed it from my mind because I think he's such a good guy.
So that must have taken a long time.
No. He's so he's been so kind to me. I would never do that. So you know, I would certain lines I draw. I would never cross that.
Anyone who's helping me, I'll never cross the line. Yeah,
anyone who isn't helping me,
he's lifting
gonna,
me up.
They're going to get it. Yeah.
What was the highlight?
Okay. Well, so Ibiza Rocks was wicked. Obviously, great crowd. DJ Nikki Beach was sweet and kind of summer vibes. But I would say getting to go to High, which is not Get High, by the way, for anyone freaks out. Go to High, which is basically the number one club in the world, and watch Fisher live, stand next to him, meet him, go to an after party with him was unbelievable. And he is again someone that you meet as like a bit of a hero. He's got a crazy social media persona. And you're a bit worried that is he going to be a nightmare? One of the nicest, like, genuine people. His missus is incredible. Chloe was incredibly genuine. Just the best night. And to watch him perform, do 3 hours live, and a guy called Wade, who's a Spanish DJ before, both of them, they just killed it. And I fell in love with DJing even more. In a room where the sound system, I think's, you know, the best you can get ever. Yeah. I mean, they're basically a guy called Charlie Tapman, who... very kind of looked after us, who's a fan of the pod, actually loves what we do, big rugby fan. He's kind of got me and my friend Garrett Truzzi to go and watch it. And he basically said that they have this sound system, obviously, because it's always constantly evolving. They hire it in for 6 months, the best in the game. They move on, and the next time something else comes out, they hire it. And honestly, when you mean the sound and just the vibe and to see it firsthand was like, oh my God, I'd give everything to be able to do that, to play one set. Then you go, then it goes off in the toilets as well. There's a party, the DJ in the toilets called the Wild Corner. And that's even more of a vibe. You go in there for a piss, you walk
great
in.
Great gig if Tins is going in for a mid-afternoon.
No, you wouldn't want to. If Tins drops one of his specials in there, it would clean the whole room
That'll
out.
That put so much pressure on me, I just don't feel like I'm relaxing there.
Yeah.
you wouldn't. Mate, baseline would not let you get comfortable.
There's 300 people in there and it goes off.
I bet there are.
It's amazing. So that was pretty cool. Obviously then coming back to hypnobirthing on Saturday was a slightly different, right. It's a different vibe. And Chloe was like, I could see her like side-eye. eyeing me just to make sure that I was like fully concentrating and focused. Just to talk about breathing and oxytocin being important for childbirth and not being too, you know, full of adrenaline. And I was like, yeah, taking notes. I put those glasses on like Homer Simpson had with the eyes painted on, and she did some mindful breathing techniques. And Chloe never missed
a beat. You were heavy breathing as well.
I fell asleep, and Chloe went, that was very good. You're both into it. And Chloe went, well, he was snoring. Like, dobbed me into the teacher. I was like, I wasn't. She goes, you were snoring. I was like, yeah, but I was just so relaxed. So yeah, I didn't get any pass. But it was actually amazing, the hypnobirthing thing.
Was it?
Yeah, honestly, I didn't think I'd be into it, because, you know, perception is, it can be a bit wanky.
Are you making friends at the antenatal classes?
That's next weekend.
Really?
Yeah, no, I haven't done that. I'm not sure. I think we're doing it in person, one-on-one. I don't think my brand of humour, because I was making a few jokes in the thing, you know, Chloe again.
You're not welcome to bring humour to the antenatal class.
Yeah, and Chloe was like, listen, it's like laughing initially. She's like, you're not taking it seriously, be serious. And like the lovely lady Alexis, who was doing the hypnobirth, she was laughing. So the more she laughed, I just kept, you know, throwing it out there. So I don't think antenatal's got me all over it, you know, breathe. And
we didn't go to that.
No, but we're going to do a little one-on-one thing, I think.
Well done. All around your tribe. You had sports day today, little video update. Victor Ludorum's all around.
My weekend was slightly different. I ended up playing for the Cherry Pickers on Saturday against the Egg Chasers for Dave Sims and Mike Crisp.
God bless both.
Unbelievable crowd turnout, so thank you to everyone.
At King's Home.
Long Levens. Yeah, so there was a lot of booze, some great banter being thrown out from the touchlines. That was good fun.
Still got the magic?
It was better than I actually thought it was going to be. Yeah, it was better than I thought. Yeah, Django can still play. So James Forrester played, and he can still play. Vix was throwing himself in there.
Quite slow down, 80.
Yeah, but he's literally carrying nothing compared to what he used to do. Yeah. And because they're all on contested scrums, it's happy days for him. He can run. He's actually running around like a small child. Davaduke, he was good. Yeah, but he's still PTing, isn't he?
There's a great story about Darren Davaduke. Just sorry to interrupt you. Is that I won't mention the guy's name, but this player was at Gloucester and would end up going out on a night out and do a few bits. And then and all the girls would say, what's your name? Like, Darren Davaduke. And when they come in on Monday, everyone's like, Dukey, you right, boys? I do. What are you talking about? They're like, Dukey, you been out doing a bit? Well, you haven't. I've got a missus. Dukey, come on. So everyone would walk past and go, we've heard about you. And he could never figure it out until the end of season. This particular player went, listen, Duke, you've got a little confession to make. I might have been using your name.
Ken Adams. Unbelievable.
You're an ass, so I haven't done fucking anything. Dukey! You know, little three balls on the weekend.
And then Saturday I had Huey Edmonds. He stayed over with Nick Wood and Beastie.
I can already see that one. You can imagine
where that went. And then they were trying to play football on Sunday. So it was a Rugby for Heroes Battle of the Balls. And we played a military team down from London. Fair play to them. They travelled 3 hours to come and play. But we actually won.
They go to Iraq for wars, mate. I think going down to Gloucester's not a problem.
We actually won.
You won?
We won, yeah, 3-2.
Who on the team had anything like skill? Or
Salvi scored two. Julian Salvi got a call up the night before and he went and scored two, and he was like, I can't run, I can't play football. And he scored one cracker. We did think we were in trouble when one of the army boys got it. He did three step overs, knocked it to the left, then killed one in the top corner, and we had Ryan Jones in nets. And I was like, yeah, that's a pretty good goal. But we did all right. We did have some former sort of Gloucester City players that played for us. So we had, you know, five, whatever they are, semi-pros.
And you were left back with a non-shell pass attitude?
Yeah, I was left back with I played to mimic a statue, so I did very little movement at all.
Roundabout.
Because my body would not function after the rugby the day before.
I'm very impressed.
Can we just clear one thing up, sorry? Because I've obviously been away for a couple of episodes. Since I've come back, someone's become a fucking social media celebrity now with his little gimmicks, hey? Yes. The Tindlayer. Gone up, how many, like 90,000 followers?
You've missed all of this, haven't you?
Yeah, of course I fucking have. I've seen it in the papers, I've been following it.
Yeah.
We've obviously had a lot of chats, but...
Well, we were talking about it with Freddie Burns last weekend, because Freddie kicks the winning drop goal in unbelievable circumstances to win his club, a comeback story, the Gallagher Premiership Final, and his following has gone up by 6,000 to 7,000. Tins wears a hat, he's gone up by 100,000.
Yeah.
100,000.
It's where the world is, isn't it?
Yeah, but
peak 2022.
And also keeping the future... well, not the future king, but keeping the future king's children in line. the carer.
What were you actually doing at that point with the old?
Okay, listen, you little prick. Be quiet, or I'll throw you off the stage.
I actually can't remember. I can't remember what he was doing.
Oh. He was like being rude, wasn't he?
But he's such a good character, is Louis.
The ones that I've got no chance of ever being in the mix are always the best characters. Did you see the one where they did a great thing where there's William standing there and George is standing next to him? George looks like a football manager.
Yes,
and William looks like
good.
He's talking, saying someone in the 40th minute. I love that. But no, but the hat thing's now become a thing, I see.
Yeah, I know. But I was talking to you about maybe I need to take it a step further and do the full dress.
If you want to blow the internet up, they would love that. I mean, I'll go with you to an event in Chloe's clothes if you go in Zed's clothes.
That would be.
What is so extraordinary, though, is that you are probably now one of the most influential hat influencers in the UK, possibly the world. If you are a milliner of any repute, what you really want to do is to get...
Of course he knows what a fucking hat maker is called. You probably did basket weaving and milling at Eton.
I did millinery at school, that was my thing.
And basket weaving. You probably got a blue at Oxford in basket weaving.
Fuck off.
See, you taught him well on that as well. Yeah, he just resorts to angry.
Yeah, it's like, you know, that you think of something clever at the end of it, you just go, fuck off, mate.
It works though, doesn't it?
It does.
It does.
And it makes you feel better at the same time.
How are your butt cheeks?
I'm a little bit stressy about it now. The kit arrived.
Can you
yesterday.
Just explain what you're doing, why you're doing it, where you're raising money, how people can help?
On Sunday we're flying out to Geneva to start on Monday, cycling from Lake Geneva to Nice, 770 kilometres over 18,000 metres of climbing.
Over how many days?
Over 6 days. Shit. I fortunately get the last day off because I have to be back for a wedding. But
so you're going to have to go doubly fast then in order to be able to get it done in 5 days?
No, I'm just going to get a taxi from wherever I finish on the night before.
That is cheap.
That is cheap. And cheating.
I was being a bit blasé about it because the other one, the Raid Pyrenean, which was hard, but it was 100 hours. So I was thinking, well, that's 4 days and a little bit. I looked at this one and the worst day on that Pyrenean one is... every day on this one. So we've got over 3,000 metres of climbing pretty much every day, which is nearly 2 miles vertically.
Mate, you know how disgusting that's going to be? Like, I had to run in the airport.
He's doing a 6-day vertical bike climb.
Yeah.
And you've compared that. I had to run in the airport.
No, but what you understand is obviously you've been training. I know you like your bike.
No, he hasn't been training. He's been talking about training for months.
Yeah, he likes a bit of watt bike. I've seen he loves the light, Chris. He's always, pre-Lycanors.
Lycanors. I'll wave at you and you drive too close to me. Yeah. I won't at all.
I was getting a flight from Nice to Barcelona. Barcelona flight was delayed and they suddenly called it. I haven't run, obviously, since I retired. We made a big point of it on this show talking about it. I must have run flat out for 2 minutes. My heart rate went to 170, running with my bag, and I honestly almost
died. I love
that
you describe it as running. I know exactly what it looked like and it ain't running.
But that's what I mean. But you're like, that was bad for me. I just think, we'll just go and do that. That'll be fine. There's no way to hide because it's uphill. Like, you can't even... You can't walk and carry a bike.
You'd be a nightmare. The heavier you get. The only saving grace is I know that Ian Bolshaw will be battling way more than me.
But also, you've got, because I told you I did that, I think, Ministry of Sound, where they did a charity bike ride thing. And they said, would you come and do it for like children in need or something? Or it was sort of fun to help.
Always giving help.
Yeah.
Let's redo that when you know charity.
It doesn't matter. I was doing a lot of work for charity. They don't like to talk about it. I was helping somebody somewhere like I do every day. And I said, I'll get on a bike. Not knowing that, I thought it was like a watt bike. It was a fixed race bike in a thing with a screen with a saddle that was basically a jagged piece of plastic. They called it the sterilizer. And I got on it and I like laughed and was joking. Oh, this is quite funny. They were like, how long we do it for? 2 hours. All these DJs were tuning in from around the world and we're doing it. I'd say 10 minutes into it, I was like, I genuinely can't do this. I was like wrapping towels to sit on it. It was the most uncomfortable. And I was honestly swearing to myself, going, why the fuck would you get me down on a proper bike? Do I look like the kind of bloke that rides a proper bike? Why would you?
What I love about you, you do just shut up and get on with it. Nah, grumble this, moany that.
No. I know. Oh, I didn't. No, I didn't complain ultimately. But they're like, "Would you like to do it again this year?" I was like, "Fuck off!" Boy, those kids can starve.
Which reminds me, the only charitable thing I think I've seen you do recently was get on a paddleboard and float downstream.
No, I that
not
was
for
two
one,
days,
not, but for 2 days.
For 2 days, yeah. Mate.
Like driftwood for 2 days.
No, on the second day. So the first day was a bit floaty, but it was quite a long day. There was absolutely no cocktails or stopping. We had to go through 35 locks. carry a flipping paddleboard, yeah. but you'd go 10 metres, get up. It was a nightmare.
Yeah, I can tell.
That was horrific. Honestly, climbing mountains is one thing. Paddleboarding through locks is horrific.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm really...
Where are you raising money and how can people help?
Yeah, so there's a Just Giving page, Mike Tindall Just Giving page. I think it's, you know, on Instagram or my... or Twitter, then I've put the links in there, so you can get off my link
You're
tree.
You're going to get a little hat donations for the cause.
Yes, indeed.
Good luck.
You don't want any, you don't want any more kids anyway, because after riding up there,
Well, there's no chance. Yeah. I mean, I've already now remembering the nightmare of the last one and the last 2 days how I double bagged. So I wore two pairs of shorts to make that padding even. Not sure it actually helped you, but it made me feel better.
And just take a load of EPO and just like just
probably would do, but I get it wrong. I'd probably die.
Because if you take EPO wrong, your body changes colour. You go like yellow. If you get it wrong, you can see like if they get the dosage wrong, it actually changes the skin tone. As you come back looking like Big Bird or Sesame Street,
sprouted feathers. So yeah, but that it should be fun. It'll be fun.
Go forth and conquer. Talking of canary yellow,
yeah,
it's Australian fucking gold, my friend, and don't you fucking forget it. Have you ever listened to 12th Man?
Yes, a few times.
Oh, if you ever spent any time on the England bus with Lee Mears and what's the South African prop called again?
Matt Stevens. He's actually English, but obviously,
Wow, with that accent. These are not bluff oysters, hey, my friend. I don't understand. Hey, please sing these back. Honestly, he was.
Hey, guys, I just want to sing my first song, huh? Yeah. Let me sing it. Shut up.
Hey, listen, me and Piglet, that's what he's called Lee Mears, me and Piglet are going to do the 12th man. Hey, we're going to do the team. And then he proceeds to this team. I didn't know what he was talking about.
It's very funny. You should listen to it.
Not the seventh time, and it's the only trick those two had.
Right. The point of it was we were moving, segueing onto some rugby union, which is a novel for us because the summer tests are finally upon us. Starting this Saturday, we're going to get into a little bit of detail around the epic tour of 2016. I'm not sure how much of it you can remember, but we'll ask you a question or two, Hask. Your defining hour as an international rugby union player. First test this Saturday, though, amazingly, almost a full day of it. 8:05 is the kickoff for the All Blacks against Ireland. Fascinating to see how Andy Farrell's men go in the land of the long white cloud. Then we've got Eddie Jones up against his old friends in Australia from 10:55. From 4:05 in the afternoon, South Africa against Wales as the world champions welcome Wayne Pivac and his side. And then in the evening, Gregor Townsend and Scotland are in Argentina for a 8:10 kickoff live all day on Sky. Is the place to watch it if you want to watch any of that.
Someone we know is covering the Sky, aren't they?
They can't find anybody else. I'm like the unflushable turd. Just can't get rid of me, and therefore I will.
I get the vote to go down. I mean, if Chloe hadn't been so selfish to get pregnant and actually someone liked me in the mainstream world, I would have quite happily gone down to Australia.
Big ifs and buts and maybes. I think
it's not the way the world works anymore. You never send anyone down there, do you?
Flats is going down. And Miles Harrison is going down.
So Michael Liner.
All the real professional ones have left the sort of detritus back here, I imagine.
Yes, I'm afraid so.
You put your Velcro shoes on the little
I
sofa?
I might well get those little puppies out again. Give the people what they want. Yeah. I might moonwalk into studio with the Velcro to make you happy. We're going to do something a bit novel at the end of this, which is going to be another
scathing
car crash.
And skeptical.
We're going to try and pick a 15 of the best players featuring in those games towards the end of the show. Good luck with that.
That is very hard.
You're very welcome to get involved.
I
know.
Please get involved and help.
Before then, and we've never done this before, which I find absolutely remarkable, I want to ask you about 2016, your finest hour and one of the most remarkable England stories that I've covered in a while, a 3-0 whitewash of the Wallabies down under off the back of a Grand Slam. Where do we start with that? Off the back of the Grand Slam, first of all, what impact did finally, after years of misfiring, did lifting a pot in France at the end of that Six Nations do for you as a player and as a team?
I mean, look, I think I've talked about it many times before, ad nauseam in my books and on record, and we've interviewed Eddie, but I think for the first time in any of our careers, that group of England players suddenly had a super professional, fun environment, which basically was aspirational. Everything had a purpose. Everything had a meaning. You were training not for the sake of it or for some belief system that you had to spend 3 hours out there. And people were treated like adults. And you know, to come off the back of a Six Nations where, you know, I'd failed in 3 Grand Slam games before that. You know, one I played 5 minutes in, 2 we kind of lost quite soundly too, and to finally get over that hump and to break that barrier and to do it the way we did it with, again, you know, Paul Gustard. Just every single meeting was kind of purposeful, but funny as fuck. Really kind of, you know, kept the cycle of when you're in a tournament period, sort of way for almost for 8 weeks with the Six Nations, maybe longer, 10 weeks. You know, the same old dreary stuff at every meeting, well thought out, characters, funny humour, risque stuff, kept you interested. Steve Borthwick, training was purposeful. You know, he, was so dedicated to helping each player, then Eddie tying everything together and Neil Hatley. It was like the...
Glenn Eller. As well.
Glenn Eller as well. Yeah, well, Glenn Eller,
I was going to ask a question about this because something that, obviously, Grand Slam, onto a whitewash of Australia. Why does that coaching group disappear?
Well, I think it was only Glenn Eller that didn't, and I presume that's because he's living
down under. Best thing, we met with Glenn Eller, our first meeting.
Of him as a player? Because he is Eller one brothers, of yes, the GOATs.
Yes, but I didn't. I'd never seen him play. Like I
didn't
knew
grow up on another 101 tries. Like
no,
most of us.
No, I didn't.
Bill's best bits.
No, I didn't.
Do you remember that?
I grew up on Mickey Skinner's Bosch.
Yeah.
Bosch.
Yeah. Whammo.
Yeah. Yeah. Crash bang wallet. What a video. So I knew that, but like I remember first meeting Glenn. He's like, Hess, nice to meet you. I was like, how? And then he goes, fucking hell, Hess, you need to sort him out. Look at the fucking state of him. Oi, get him one of your books, Hess. Get him a book. Look at the fuck, he's too fat, mate. He's going to die young. And I was like, and you can see this guy looking at me like, please help me. And I was like, I don't really know what to do here. Next meal, Hess, you give him one of your books? Oi, look at the fucking all the chips he's got, mate. He had Glenn Eller so scared of like me dobbing him in. He'd come up and go, you go, Hess, Glenn, show Hess what you got in the bowl. And I'd have to, seriously, because Eddie was there watching him, I'd have to say, oh, yeah, probably isn't right there and maybe you want that. But we actually got like a house of fire because we just laughed.
They were at primary school together,
yeah,
weren't they?
But they had that primary, Eddie, like classic, like proper. Glenn was like looking at me and, you know, and then he made me write a whole lot of training for him. And Eddie goes, mate, he's never going to fucking do that. Like, and I'd see Glenn next to him, did you do any of that? He'd be like, no. I didn't. I'm like, okay. We're just doing this charade for Eddie, are you? But we finished the Six Nations. Obviously, won the Grand Slam, had this kind of real amazing sort of night out in France, came back, and then we met up for Australia. And obviously, I wasn't aware, because I'd actually, of all these Southern Hemisphere teams, Australia was a team that I played least. Okay. I'd actually never started against Australia before. I'd always end up coming on or whatever, or not getting on the field. And he basically... You know, we set out to kind of prepare for this tour where it was against Michael Checker, my former coach at Stade Francais, who I regard as a fantastic coach, very aggressive guy. He'd taken Australia to World Cup final, you know, obviously beaten well by New Zealand, but they'd played pretty incredible. I was playing against David Pocock and Michael Hooper, two of the best back row players that I'd played against, whose video clips, along with McCaws and, you know, Warburton's, a few other guys around that I would watch in the build-up to games or watching the week to training and try and emulate, was suddenly going to go there. And I was the opportunity for me to start. I'd come off the back of a good Six Nations. And we sort of went there. And Eddie, again, just the atmosphere, the travel, everything was just so much fun, but also really dedicated and focused. He took Ellis Genge, took Kyle Sinclair, you know, two sort of absolute tearaway nightmares. So training, they were always trying to fill everyone in training. He was trying to get everyone kind of hyped up. And I just never forget, the first kind of week's preparation went really well. The night before, Dylan Hartley had a meeting and he played a video clip of the Australian media basically mugging us off. Now,
That was their promo, wasn't it?
That was their promo.
Was the Fox Sport boys all laughing at English rugby.
And so the thing with it, so the British media, I said, I hammer it, but you know, the British media obviously are pretty toxic in general. They obviously sell papers. And then what they do is they'll come after us. So if you ever see, this is a perfect example of this. When, you're playing, if you made a mistake, and I made a mistake in terms of the Australian team names, they'd absolutely lambast me. We'd be all over arrogant English. When Brody Retallick got Courtney Laws' name, or Michael Laws, they all just went, oh, it's just a Kiwi, like, doesn't know. You know, so far away, doesn't know. So we can be pretty spicy. And what they do is they like to build up the opposition. They have this real right deference to the Southern Hemisphere sides. Over in Australia, I love it because they don't really give a fuck about anything. They're much more rogue. They say shit on radio, which, you know, in this kind of climate, it's quite loose. And they created this Fox Sport media thing where basically it was interspersed with interviews from legends of the game and then a cut out of people laughing hysterically as we're getting absolutely drilled. And basically the final bit was, they goes, well, I just don't know what they're going to do. Now they haven't got a rugby league bloke to blame the whole loss on. Right, and it finished. And I actually sat there going, fucking hell. I mean, I don't care about that kind of stuff. But I was like, wow, that is the most disrespectful thing I've ever seen. Because it was the way that it kept, a bit of text, mugging us off. We're getting absolutely smashed. This guy laughing. Text. Getting smashed, laughing, and finished with just like down, almost the camera like disappeared down the guy's throat as he laughed. He just sat there in silence and like was like, wow, they really, really, really don't think we're any good here. They really think we're going to get pumped. And I'll never forget the day before the night of the test, I was leaving the hotel. I said it and talked about it in Water Flanker. My mate Travis called me and he was like, what's the difference between, you know, kind of you guys and you know, you as a player versus your oppositions? I said, obviously, you know, the talent, but at this level, you've been doing it for this period of time. You're the same well-drilled, same size, same power. So what does it come down to? It comes down to mindset. And what do those players have better than you? It's probably reading the game, anticipation and reactivity. You know, that you would say that, you know, some of those things you can, you know, obviously there's natural talent, but leveler in certain athletic ability. But what is Pocock, making the right decision at the right time, anticipation, running in the right place, Hooper's the same, apart from their natural ability. And I just sat there going, fucking hell, I've done all this work, I've done everything I could do. Mm. What's, that's all it is. And I went out there and I just loved it and I enjoyed it. And we smiled and we played. And I never actually, for the first few minutes or first sort of 10, 15 minutes of the game when he took Luther Burrell off,
yeah,
we actually were under the pump. I never at one point in that game really came to understand what we'd done because I felt under pressure. I'd never felt like we were going to win it. And just a few things clicked and that break off the back of the ball and stepping someone and going and nearly getting there and Hooper, you know, that tackle, taking someone around the legs and bouncing back to my feet and getting the ball, you know, back in and those kind of turnovers. Some of those bits in other games I've done similar and they haven't come off or they haven't gone well. But I didn't finish that game thinking, fuck me, I played the best game ever. Or I just thought, you know what, we've gone well. This is the build. What an evening. But I knew something when I came off the field when everyone was really congratulatory. But my phone was just like, I never had that many. I didn't got that many friends. I had that, you know, that, I had messages from people I'd never heard of. And I came out to a post-match interview and the commentator in the interview was the nicest ever. Normally with England, it's a bit, especially with me, it can be a little bit pointed. And I honestly said in my interview, I said, well, I must have done something right because everyone's been so nice to me. And I came off and Chloe said to me, do you know what you've done? And I said, no. She goes, honestly, I've never seen you play like that. And it just kept rolling and rolling. And again, we went out, we had a couple of beers that night, went back to the hotel. I was obviously a bit battered and bruised. And I'd taken my decks out with me because again, on tour previously, I just feel like people are always looking to stitch you up or get into trouble. And my temptation, I'm too much for a, you know, want to make people laugh. So I just stayed in my room, was DJing, just chilled. We'd go out for coffees. It's an amazing place, Australia. And we built into that second test. And again, you know, more fired up. And I thought, actually, they were so much more physical, but there was like that. There was just an edge. Whereas the first week, they hadn't respected us. Second week, they realised they'd got filled in a bit. And there was that tussle in the tunnel.
It was a pre-game.
So going in for half time, their scrum half, I can't remember, pushed someone into the wall. It all fucking kicked off in the tunnel.
Nick
it was
Phipps.
Yeah, Phipps was had proper aggro. Everyone was pushing in.
What actual punches thrown?
No, well, I didn't. To be honest with you, it was just like everyone. Throat. Yeah, everyone, well, the thing is, because in the tunnel, everyone just piled in. There's no space. All piled in. Everyone was like, "Fuck you!" It was like proper naughty. Like Israel Folau was playing kind of, you know, unbelievable at that period of time. And I thought at one point I was going to get yellow carded because I tackled him just before the line and he's so strong. I didn't realise how strong. He sort of stretched out and I basically had to use all my power to pin him to the floor and I lay on top of him so he couldn't get the ball out and then sort of start cheating but got away with it. Luckily, other games I would have got yellow carded and it just all kind of fitted in that last 5 minutes running. I thought a stud had gone through the bottom of my boot but my tendons had all torn. And then I sort of came off and sat in the change room because my toe was so sore. Again, I didn't really appreciate what we'd done, that we'd won the test series. It was always about, can I get to week three? Can I finish it? Can we do it? And obviously the rest was kind of history. And I just think what was so good about the tour was the off-field entertainment. You know, Danny Kerr, Jamie George, well, Anton Deck, and I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. They were doing Anton Deck and they would come in and plan all these skits, all this stuff. And then one day they come in and they go, right, lads, welcome, you know, do all the accents. I can't do Geordie, you know, you're doing fine. Whatever, I can't do it. And they were, they do the proper accents and then they got in a whole load of snakes, spiders, lizards, everything, brought these things, right, we've got to do the Bush Tucker trials. And fucking, you know, putting a snake on Joe Marler and he screamed and ran out of the room. You know, and the other lads were like, you know, had like a spider on my face. and they sort of did all these challenges and then we'd go out for meals and we'd have this kind of social committee and Eddie just fucking loved it. And all the training was kind of really, really smartly done. And that second week, he just let me, didn't have to train as much as I needed to, just make sure you're ready for the game. And honestly, it was the best tour. And as we finished on the night out, I mean, that was when... Mara had just made, like, obviously made his debut in that Six Nations, had come on tour, was playing, and you know, he's obviously like kind of missed the professional. But on that final night, got absolutely smashed up and was supposed to have one-on-ones the next day. And he'd missed his one-on-one with Borthas, who, if you're a second row, Borthas is like the granddaddy, the grandpuppy,
the Don.
You know, the godfather, the Don of line-outs. And Marrow's only like, was he 21? Come off, he won the premiership. They called him the Pearl because he was like the most valuable asset. The man with the golden touch. He'd won the premiership, a grand slam, then went on tour. He'd never fucking lost. No. He'd never lost. And then get on tour. And I did laugh when he came in. He was still in his suit, steaming. And he came and sat down. He'd missed his meeting by about 2 hours. And apparently just walked in and Borthas had just gone, you know, come back when you're ready or something like that. And he was like sitting there like all dejected, like he was a broken man. Now you wouldn't give a shit, but it was just really good to see. I was like, even Mr. Perfect gets it wrong a little bit. And then I sat in the... And we had one more day before we fly, and I sat with like 20 lads outside a bar just up drinking cloudy cider. With just like that horrific, I don't know where they got it from, I don't know what it was from, but it was absolute diesel. And then we got back on the plane, and that was where I had to reprimand a couple of lads. Because like, they were like, look, you've got to sit down, things got a little bit spicy. Not spicy, just a bit like lads were too pissed. And obviously, because the environment was so good, you wanted to protect it.
Yeah.
So I was like, fucking hell, because Eddie wasn't on the plane, Dylan wasn't on the plane, so I was like the most senior player there, so I had to like reprimand a couple of lads, and one bloke just wouldn't go to bed. He's like tried to crawl under the seats to get to the back, and I had to tell him a million times go to bed. I had to put him to bed, make sure he went to bed. But then the Welsh got on the plane at Dubai, and they were more, if it was possible, they were more drunk than we were, more drunk than we were, and they'd honestly been threatened their plane was going to be turned around if they didn't fucking behave. And they stood at the front going, they'd sit there and everyone would be trying to be like a cover because it was the next flight, still a bit steaming. They'd be like, Haskell, give us a wave. You go for a wave, you go, hey, right? They'd be like, Robshaw, give us a wave. He didn't wave, like, boo, right? And they were playing spoof, and Ross Moriarty had to get a selfie with Chris Robshaw, who he'd never met before. So he had to wake Robbo up to get a selfie. And Rob was like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, all right, bud, give me a fucking selfie. And then they'd be like, Haskell, show us your six pack. And I'd be like, no, they're like, boo, you're shit, man. Honestly, it was fucking carnage. And I won't dob him in, was so drunk. I was like, how? I don't know how. He basically went through on the baggage claim.
I love that. But he was just tag him.
Tag him and bag him and send him home.
I feel so sorry for the couple that were on their honeymoon, sitting in row 15, B and C.
But it was just, you know, it was just a really...
The first time they'd ever been in business class. Yeah.
It was just a really good moment, even from having, like, you know, Glenn there and that kind of magic, and a couple of other people had flown out, like Dean Benton, who became our kind of conditioner, just come in. And obviously I got on the bus at one point, and he was like wearing full Adidas stash, never met me, serious operator. Eddie didn't give a fuck. I was on him going, fucking hell, we've got a competition winner here who didn't get the fucking memo about the dress code. Mate, get up and sing. He'd never met, I had no idea who he was. All the lads forced him out, shit, sit down, like making him sing. It was just a very, very good time where everyone did their role, everyone did what they were supposed to do. Everyone had a good time. Everyone enjoyed themselves. And it went to a 3-0 victory, which was just mental.
I have never heard you speak with so much warmth, excitement, fondness of your days in an English shirt.
He never talks about us that way.
No, he doesn't.
But, you know, and it was just almost the perfect storm of just how to get things. And I think, you know, there was a great bit with Paul Gustard, who talked about before, I was the first or second test, I can't remember, talking about kind of the man in the mirror. There's a Michael Jackson song, Man in the Mirror, but there's also that very famous poem about the man in the mirror. And he gave each player a small compact with a picture of yourself on it. And when you opened it up, there's a picture of the mirror and a picture of you playing. And he said, oh, this is the only person that matters in this game. And you were like, what the fuck's in this? Opened up as a mirror. And he talks about that whole kind of mindset. And then, you know, in the build up to the first test, they were like, who are their talisman players? And so we had a thing where we're like in training, and they had cardboard cutouts of the players in the hotel. So you'd have a cardboard cutout of Phipps, you'd have a cardboard cutout of Israel Folau, you'd have a cardboard cutout of Hooper, you'd have a cut, and basically you'd have to stick bullseyes on them. And in training, the amount of times you got to him, they would stick at him. So you'd have like fucking Israel Folau with like 50 fucking like crosses on him, like he'd been battered in training. You know, poor Danny Care obviously hated it because he was getting filled in. You know, I can't remember who the young players were on tour playing back row, but they were like Pocock Hooper. He'd pop up, so you'd have to fill him in. So there'd be a picture of Hooper with loads of red crosses on him. And that's just, again, everything, visual reminders, fun. You know, he wanted us to go out and enjoy ourselves. Then you got, like I said, the Anton Deck skits and just the kind of wild, wild stuff. It just all worked out brilliantly.
When you get all you want and you struggle for self and the world makes you king for a day, then go to the mirror and look at yourself and see what that man has to say. Dale Wimbrough. I love it. I remember the story of this poem coming out in the aftermath of that remarkable tour. A couple of bits that you've mentioned that I'd love to ask about. Do you remember Luther getting hooked in? Because I only ask that because obviously he's had enormous sympathies from us to him. He's had, you know, been very brave in the press this week and obviously referred not only to his experience on that tour, but also some of the incredibly...
I saw him on the tube last Friday.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Small world. What's he doing?
Literally. Ding. Every time I say that now, I always think of you two. I didn't really get to talk to him. I was going to a lunch at the brewery and he got on and I literally said hello. I said literally again. I said hello.
We should start making charitable donations.
Zed says it as well.
Yeah, she does.
Both of you say it. And so when I've sat with you, she's gone literally, you've gone literally, and I was like, we were just fueling each other. You're not noticing it?
I didn't really get to talk to him. I was only on the same tube with him 2 minutes. So, a man shake and a hug.
He's obviously confronted some pretty unsavoury truths this week in the media, which obviously is his story to tell. But he was very open and honest about the damage that was done to him getting hooked. Do you remember him going off?
Yes, but...
it's quite unusual.
I would have said it was quite unusual, unless you'd played at Wasps back in the day, where Sean Edwards would be like, right, fucking get Oogie on, get Ayola Rinley on. Right, and he'd bring Oogie on. 6 minutes later, get fucking Oogie off, took him back on. He was a replacement that got replaced.
Right.
And I thought, wow, I've never seen it. But he did that twice to him before. So I'd never seen that before with a player. But then with Luther, I just, when you're in it and you're sort of playing, you just don't appreciate, but you're a bit like, oh, it's not good. And to be fair, what Eddie said, again, you know, it's Luther's story to tell, but Eddie after game said, look, you know, to be fair, you know, it was a fucking harsh call to take Luther off. But it was important for the team. You know, I've spoken to him, you know, and... you know, it was the right decision to make to address what needed to be done. And, you know, but obviously that doesn't take away from the fact that it's the same way as when you're not starting a game and you're in the finishers, you still want to be fucking starting. Like, nobody wants to be in the finishers. You never want to get hooked up. So I can imagine psychologically and mentally, especially on that aspect, it would have had a horrific impact. And unfortunately, you know, obviously, like I said, I haven't seen the stuff with Luther, but he's a top guy, a great team guy and a lovely bloke, and you wouldn't want to ever see that happen to anyone.
Yeah.
But it was just one of those kind of shocking things. But I did, again, you didn't really take it in because I constantly felt...
so much going on around you.
Yeah, and also because I was playing against the two best back row players. And actually, I think Pocock had gone to hit him or he'd stepped me a little bit. So I was like properly just worried about myself. Do you know what I mean? I was like, fuck, I need to get back into this. We need to sort this out. We can't afford to lose it. And even when we were kind of ahead, they were down by our line for such a period of time. I was like, Jesus, if we've messed this up, you know, because we were still...
You almost went three tries to zip down.
Yes.
I think Luther got hooked off the back of Bernard Foley having a second try disallowed.
Yes, and that's when we were like... And that's what it felt like the whole time. They were going to win. We were playing against the best. Yes, we had won a Six Nations, but I'd never had a consistent... Not like Tins, you know, who beat every Southern Hemisphere side a number of times and they weren't seen as a weapon. For me, my entire career... I'd not really beat many Southern Hemisphere sides. I'd beaten all of them at some point, but never consistently, never in Australia, never against Australia. And it was a pretty intense period of time. So I never felt comfortable in that game at all.
You glossed over the tackle. But do you know when you've got it out?
Split second between the yellow, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. In this day and age, you'd probably...
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. It was a hard one because actually, if you see, one of the things I loved about Paul Gusta was that he knew how hard I was on myself and he wanted to give me confidence. And they all did. We've talked many times about coaching was instead of having a large life and personality and being kind of fun off it, as being kind of a threat, going, right, what does he do well? He trains the house down, trains as hard, if not harder than anyone, and wants to play and perform. And if we motivate him, he'll do it. So they gave me that freedom, you know, especially you saw in that Six Nations, even from that first game against Scotland. You know, we've done a bit of a shit half, and then I went, fuck this, and I end up banging four of them, you know, massive impact hits, and played really well. And you see me, I've gone up in the line, and I've looked, and I've sort of held my feet. And then I saw it's fucking Pocock, and I was like, shit, you know, he's carries real hard. Yeah. He's got a low center of gravity, and you know he's got a set of feet on him. What can we do? So as he went up, obviously people always say this, you can't jump into a tackle anyway. So you know he jumped, and I saw it, and I basically was like waiting, and because I was already up in the line, it was kind of the perfect time where you know I think his tip of his toe touched the floor, and I smoked him. It was a great tackle, but I didn't think, oh wow, this has motivated everyone, because the best thing about playing with Owen Farrell is, and why I loved that period of time, when I hit someone, he'd fucking scream the place down, whoop the place down. The other person who was like, it was Andy Goode. When I smashed Chris Halafia once, who's obviously, again, an absolute weapon of a bloke, came off the back of a line out, ran a play, and I picked him up and honestly like smoked him, which I've never done before, because I, you know, he's again another sort of ruthlessly hard player, to former Tongan policeman.
Yeah.
And Andy Goode used to cheer, but Owen Farrell would cheer every time I smoked someone. And obviously trying to get Owen's approval is always a hard thing to do. It's a lifelong quest. And so he would love it, and the boys would whoop and you'd get marrow clapping. And so I knew it was good because everyone was going, yeah, come on. And, you know, and Dylan was cheering and we sort of went on. And that was really important to me, was I knew when I'd done something well, because I got instant gratification because lads would love it.
Yeah.
And I felt that everyone was with me. But then it was that moment where people talk about it, but kind of being the change in the play of the game, where you showed, it's like if you can show that a god can bleed, then they're only human like everyone else. If you can show that Pocock can get folded, then maybe he's not superhuman after all. And that, I kind of think that broke down the barriers a little bit.
So Jack Knowles scored late in the first test, and it was high score. I think it was 28-39. Second test, you sort of touched on already, but the stat that I was just having a look before we did this, 215 tackles to 81.
Yeah.
What is that like as a day at the office?
Hard. Like, I mean, but perfect. Because of the way that Gustav had the defence firing, A, you wanted to play for him, B, it was kind of super accountability in terms of the meeting. And it was such a weapon. You know, that was when Eddie came in and went, right, what is English rugby about? How do they win the World Cup? Big forward pack, great set piece, very good, very aggressive defence. And that's what whole DNA was that we went back to.
If you have that sort of defence, it might look like it's brutal, but you're also quite comfortable at the same time.
Yeah.
If you do that, if you do the right stuff and you make dominant hits and then you can north the ball a bit, you're ready to go again, whereas the attacker going, fuck, we're running into brick walls. Yeah,
and I felt freedom that if I went up in the line, it was a race to get up in the line, to get up and hit people, and you wanted to hit, so people were fighting you to make a hit. They would try to do it together, so you just felt kind of very, very good. And again, for me, I actually genuinely feel that I played better in the second test than I did the first test.
Yeah.
From my own personal thing. I've never actually watched either of them back.
I've seen,
because they play the first test highlights more, but I actually think if I was to watch it back, I think the second test was better. I think just because of the amount of work I had to go through, the way I played and the physicality that I had and some of the skullduggery and bits and pieces. And also, with that first test, they took us for granted. That second test, those young second rows for Australia and their back row had been read the Riot Act. They got fucking...
Was the game. I've mentioned this before. So I did the game for Sky, and I remember seeing that you get the feeds really early, long before you go on air, so you can see what's going on at the ground, etc. And they cut to before we'd gone on air, Michael Checker giving a team talk in the Australian changing room, and he'd lit a...
flare.
Like a flare. And he was jabbing his players with this sort of burning beacon.
Yeah.
And we were obviously going to put it in and say, geez, we think Australia are up to it. And as they were sort of clipping up and getting it ready to be part of our coverage, the call came through from the ARU saying, we've obviously just seen what's gone out on the world feed. Please don't use that.
Yeah.
So you bury it.
I mean, so Checker, if you get beaten with physicality and it becomes a man test, and he is, you know, everything is about being a man and being physical and everything else like that. If you don't get that right, that's what he would question. I think he would take it if you got beaten, you know, by a better side that had played well. But if you got beaten through physicality, you know, that second test, they came out fighting the tunnel, fighting the carrying. They were fucking trash talkers, you know, getting up, using you, you know, the old trick of the book, hit you, get up, use your face to get up. You know, from the first test or the first time you play, I remember in Sash Robbie, I got up and you go to hit and like a Welsh guy counter-rucks you right at the side of the head. Someone flies in with an elbow and treads on you. And you're like, oh, wow, this is the kind of game. That first carry and you like get into them and they're all shouting and everyone's going full steam ahead. That was the vibe and it was a war. And I enjoyed it because it was like a proper old school kind of man test.
I like those. They're just, all you need to know is you just need to front up. That's an easy one, that one, to get.
If you say so. The other thing, I mean, you were obviously man of the series and it was your crowning glory. But the other thing I wanted to mention that second test, it was actually Chris Robshaw who was man of the match on his 50th. And I remember that tour as a righting of a lot of wrongs for quite a few players.
Yeah.
How pleased were you for him just to have a... I remember he got a silver cap in the change room, I think, from Leonard afterwards.
I mean, I'd say of all the players, again, and this... I'll never forget that in that Six Nations, actually, in particular, I don't know if we beat Wales away or home, which six I've got, I'm not sure which, I can never remember.
That was the Elliot Daly last minute try.
Oh, fine, okay. So I tell you what, there was one part where in a warm-up game for something where basically England beat Wales at Twickenham and Chris Robshaw got into his locker and sat there and cried like a baby. And cried like a baby. I mean, I've done that a number of times in relation to rugby, but cried like a baby and was like, oh, we've done it. And I gave him a hug. And he's like, we did it. And I, just to exercise that demon of like, we've done it, we've beaten them, and that's what mattered. And I think, you know, for him on that journey, more than anyone, you know, we don't talk about it, but he took the rap for the World Cup unfairly. You know, he wasn't supported the way he was. Actually, there was a lot of people looking the other way when asked who was going to kick the penalty and nobody wanted to kick it. So it didn't matter what fucking decision. I mean, I can say it now, I can give a fuck. Nobody wanted to kick that fucking penalty. Everyone was looking the other way. The cone didn't come down from the coaches. No one's, because normally now,
It's
on the fucking field. You don't get a choice as soon as it's on the field. Everyone was looking the other way. People went, I don't want it. I don't think I can get it. Oh, I'm not sure. So he went, fuck it, go for the corner, right? And everyone left him out to dry. As if he'd gone, oh, I know, but I'm going to, you know, he doesn't fucking kick the ball. So that happened. And then Eddie Jones has said that he didn't think he was a good captain.
Yeah.
And then he all
six
told
and
us.
And a half.
Six and a half. Said we're all unfit. So then obviously you've got to come in where he's met up with him. Robbo was probably playing some of the best rugby of his career during that Six Nations and that thing. He was doing what he did best. He worked his, you know, consistently in training clips. We talk about that kind of extra bit of work, you know, where he'd someone to carry on chasing. Like Eddie valued the meters. It was all about accelerations. And Robbo would get accelerations the whole time, chasing people down. Even in training, someone would make a break. Robbo would fucking work. And in games, he did the same thing. Played like a hero. Exercised that demon. Won a fucking Six Nations. Though he wasn't captain, I think he was more comfortable not being captain. In my personal opinion, you have to ask him whether that's right. But he didn't need the responsibility. He was able just to be what he wanted to do. You know, him and I can enjoy ourselves as back row players with Billy, a guy that played with like supreme confidence, who gave you a different choice. We each had our role. And then to go and then get man of the match on his 50th after, you know, if some people had had the choice, he never would have played again.
Yeah.
A bit like me as well after that World Cup. Yeah. I just think it was all a big moment. And Jason Leonard, you know, to be out there to give it up in the changing room and to say that we fucking won it. But you know what? That was a shame after that second test because we still had a job to do.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about, you know, Eddie was like, listen, I don't want you to go and play two and go, oh, always let him back in. He's like, fucking, why does he always let him back in for the third test? Let's absolutely whitewash them. The job's not done until we finish them and put the knife into them. And that's what he wanted us to do. And that's what they went and did.
Yeah, 44-40 in the final, an absolute game.
Some
of basketball.
Good scoring in this.
Yeah, free scoring.
As well, I remember.
That's where I brought that Tangeli Nairavoro on.
Yes.
You remember?
Yeah.
Mate, I played with him at Saints, the biggest man in the world. That was terrifying. And they had Skelton as well, didn't they? Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I think so, I mean, there's a lot of tonnage there. Do you remember having a beer with Checker afterwards? Did you slink away into the night?
No, I obviously I was a bit. You know, I was quite a lot of pain with my ankle, and it was one of those things where. Everyone had been so nice to me, wanted to carry on that momentum. It was like the worst thing that could ever happen is you sort of have this moment where finally, after, you know, 70-odd caps, people or whatever it was, people are actually giving you credit. And I genuinely believe that I'd played as good as that before in an England shirt. But I think when the team's going well and you maybe haven't won or the favour and people want to get behind you, you'll see it. They'll hype you up. So I went up to him and I said to him, listen, Jack, you know, great to see you. And he was like, fucking hell, mate. Where the fuck did that come from? You know, fuck, you know, like, and he was kind of very, very complimentary in his way, going, you know, fucking hell, mate, if it wasn't for you, you know, and I was like, well, that for me was the biggest compliment because I absolutely love him. And I think he was, he's a good guy. And you could see all the different ways that he was trying to motivate that side. And I sort of felt bad that I or I had been part of a team that had put Australia to the sword in that way.
Come on.
Well, I mean, again, because I'm not that.
It's not very Syrian, both.
No, but I'm not. But I'm not like that. You know, I've told you before. I'm not nationalistic in that team. You want to beat. You want to beat people because you want to beat people. You don't beat them because they're a nation.
Yeah, but also at the same time, you don't think about that when you're playing. No, you think about it afterwards. Yeah, so you actually don't really care.
No.
You only think about it afterwards, you know, whether it's come off. If they'd have beaten you, you wouldn't be thinking, oh, well, actually, I wouldn't have liked to have beat them.
Yeah, the bloody Australia. No, I just thought it was nice at the end of it to go, oh, you know, just good to see you. And also the...
he's a good bloke, though, Czech.
Yeah, he is. And so he was good. So I did have a beer with him, had a catch up with him quickly after the change room. I went and sat with Pocock and Hooper. I was trying not to be a super fan. You know, like, I'm sort of one of these boys, you probably noticed this part.
You're a bit like the drummer that went on to play with the Foo Fighters. Actually played really well. They were like, no, fuck off. You've done your bit.
But again, I think they don't, because I have that demeanour of like, where, oh, I look like I'm up my own arse and I probably know it and I do stupid stuff. I sort of want to be like mates to them and like trying to have chats. But obviously, Pocock is now a senator who couldn't be any less like me in the world. And Hoop, you know, and Hooper again,
first
probably
independent
just,
as well.
Yeah, can't really work out what I'm what I'm about. So I was trying to be like chummy with them and like, right, lads. And at the end of it, it's like, yeah, so I'm probably just going now. They're like, yeah, see you later. It's like, we enough friends? They're like, nope. Okay.
No.
It was a hell of a story, a hell of a tour. And I'm so pleased for you and Robbo and Mike Brown, who made his 50th, et cetera, that there was that chapter to your careers that otherwise would have been.
It's quite a rare thing, though, in the modern era to win a three.
Yeah, well,
three
exactly.
Test series as well.
But also 3-0.
Yeah. But you normally get all through the... I can't remember doing three tests.
No. Well, they're sort of back now. I mean, I think it was... Yeah, they're about now, to go again, funny enough, because they're going to start playing more countries on the summer rotation. But right. I think the three-test series
three
is fantastic.
Three-test is because you're actually playing for something. A two-test where you might win 2-0, but unless you're playing New Zealand, you end up 1-1 or something, and then you just feel cheated out of another game. But
yeah. Best achievement of your England career with the Grand Slam still sit just above it?
Oh, it's a hard one. I think I'd say Grand Slam just because of what the
history.
The history, but also what it means, the Six Nations means to us over here.
Yeah.
You know, I think winning a World Cup is obviously a level up against that. Winning a Lions Tour is the same level, but different. I think Grand Slam, having failed three times before, I think you're never going to get there and never do it. That Australia tour was a bonus, but the Grand Slam for me was the best. I just think it was a moment in my career where I absolutely loved putting on the white shirt. I felt like I was made a better player, a better person. I had a fucking time of life, but in a fun, as much fun as you could possibly ever have with good people who accepted me for me. And it wasn't that hard to manufacture that, but he just got it right. And it just showed me and taught me that period of time about business and management, then made me reflect on every other coach I'd worked with. Jamie Joseph in Highlanders, what a great coach he was. Michael Checker, what a great coach he was. You know, Sean Edwards, what a great coach. But each style, seeing how they worked, you know, working with Dyer Young as well, great coach. All these different guys, seeing what made them work, what didn't work, and then having a good appraisal of that and going, right, if I was to be a coach now, what environment would we like? We're obviously in business together doing different stuff, seeing what... You know, what standards would you have? What standards wouldn't you have? How would you execute things? What's important? Micromanaging people in regards to their confidence. It was a very good life lesson to me to show you how in a short period of time from a team that couldn't get out of their own pool stages of a World Cup could go on and win a Six Nations and win a Grand Slam with essentially the same group of players. What is it that was different? What is it that worked? And, you know, I think it was a perfect storm of 8 or 9 elements that has not been repeated since, apart from, you know, when they nailed it getting to the World Cup final, which, you know, is an unbelievable achievement. He said he wanted to do it. He said we were going to become, we never actually made it to number one in the world, but we equaled that All Black record.
Yeah, 18 consecutive wins.
Apart from when the Red Roses beat that completely.
Yeah.
But that was the record at the time. We equaled it and fucking lost to Ireland. Bastards ruined another party at the Aviva.
Great summer of rugby that. In 2016, we will hope for something similar over the next few weeks. And we're going to finish with, I mean, God help us all. I mean, I don't know why we set ourselves these challenges, but we're going to do it nevertheless. We're going to pick a composite 15 from the squads of New Zealand against Ireland, Australia against England, South Africa against Wales, and Argentina against Scotland.
Northern Hemisphere.
Do you want to, well, we could do that. Do you just want to do a home nations job or do you want to do all 8? So essentially, either we're picking a Lions squad, or we're picking a composite, and therefore there is something to look at in every game.
Let's do a Northern Sons famous as well. United team. Who are we going to?
All eight squads
in the team together. Well, I mean, it's pretty going to be pretty, you know.
We haven't picked France because they're playing against Japan. And to be honest with you, they've left out most of their frontline squad, and they've still picked a squad that's better than most of the teams heading elsewhere.
Yeah, and we saw with the Barbars, they've still got a pretty good team.
They've got
the French
some
Barbars
talent coming through. Do feel free to play along at home if you'd like to.
Well, unless you've got nothing else to do.
Drop your teams in the comments section on YouTube or any of our socials. Please play nicely. We always ask that. I know one or two of you get very upset about this. It is a little bit of fun. We are going to get it wrong. Yeah. There are going to be amazing individuals that we leave out, but it's just to provoke a little bit of thought, a little bit of debate. Don't take it too seriously. I think we might try and review it after the series.
Yes.
But let's start with our loose head. Obvious shout for Ellis, who is in the form of his life. I think the other two to look at are Ox Nche from South Africa and Stephen Kitsoff for the box as well.
I thought Stephen Kitsoff.
Did you?
Because also...
I'll let you explain that to Ellis.
Because also, I follow him on Instagram. He's a great player playing Highlands. He's an absolute ginger man with a fit misses as well, which is unbelievable. Which I was
so
like,
not
surprised.
A lot to do with his binding technique, but very good on socials.
I just looked at him and go, wow, you know, for like a bigger gentleman prop, he's done very well. Do you know what I mean? Like, you just look at it and go, fair play.
Yeah.
Fair play. You know, because you got prop, bigger body, bigger gentleman.
Prop and
pale,
ginger.
And ginger, which obviously is absolutely fine
you're not
these
starting
days.
Starting with four aces there, right?
No, that's what I mean. But he's done well. And he's an incredible player.
He won the bloody
URC thing.
Yeah, and the World Cup.
And the World Cup. I mean, that's pretty much, and he's done more than me, you know.
Fair play. Okay, well, that wasn't very difficult. This is going to be a quick
game. I don't know if this was the kind of thing we were talking about.
Yeah, but I think based on social media presence alone.
And also his current rep is this season, World Cup, won the thing, URC.
Yeah.
So I thought it would be quite good. I mean, any difference?
No, I like what we've done with that.
Who's the key? The key we got?
Who was I thinking of for Australia? Who's...
Taniela Tupou?
Tongan
Thor.
Tongan Thor. He is... Yeah. He's pretty good. And he did that funny advert recently. Have you seen about it?
He's quite good at
the
acting,
afternoon
actually.
Tea, yeah. I mean, that's again...
Feet to die for. That King I would say Kerry. I do like that in my loose head.
Yeah, I mean, if we were precious as a British or as an English people, you know, all drinking afternoon tea, or we all looking bred, we all look like... I mean, it looks like one of a whole basic garden party at Alex's house.
Yeah. What I will say is he's got an injury at the moment, so he might not feature in the first test.
Ah, okay. Well, should we go? Okay.
So should we maybe bring him back in a bit later on?
Yeah.
He's also a tight head, so that's why we won't pick him on the side. So let's just go with Stephen Kitsoff for sheer lack
Alan
of knowledge.
Alan Alatoa. Thought he was the tight head. Sorry, this is how much I still know about my Lucy's and Lucy Lefties.
We did something with Martin Johnson the other day, and I so wanted to say to him, he was talking about the fact that, you know, lots of players go through their careers and don't necessarily know the detail of what goes on up front and the nuance and the skills that are required to operate in the dark arts. And I wanted to say, Tins doesn't even know which one is one and which one is three, tight head or loose head.
I don't know that.
Right.
But, and I also don't
know. Lucy Lefty, number one.
Yeah, I know Lucy is one, but I don't know what they wear on their backs.
Well, one.
So,
what?
Well, no. You idiot. I mean, when I look
at a
player... I
know Lucy is one, but I don't know when he has his back.
When I watch Ellis, I think of Ellis. I don't look at the number on his back.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I don't... And also,
I'd have the same around the back row. So, a lot of the time, I wouldn't necessarily know who's a six and who's a seven.
I mean, also, someone needs to explain to Jonathan Johnson that also only front row and second rows care about what goes on in the nuance area.
And the nuance between if you wear a four or a five on your back
matter.
And who's the line-out caller.
All I know is that tight heads, because they've got their head in between two people, earn more cash than the one who's got his head outside, because they're seen
and
as...
And generally, they'll
weaker.
Put the better scrummaging second row on the right side to help the tight head.
Yes,
they?
And we know that. And also, a loose head can't really play tight head, but a tight head can play loose head. I know that. I know they make a fortune out of talking shit and they cheat like fuck and no referee understands what's going on. And also, second row, I reckon, is the...
The other thing about being a prop is whatever happens in a scrum... Whatever way the penalty goes, you can always get up and go, nah, you've got that wrong.
Yes, and you can just go this.
No prop has ever emerged from a collapsed scrum and gone,
yeah, good decision.
Actually, yeah, you caught me there, ref, sorry.
At that dinner, Jono also, a big lag came up and Jono, oh yeah, play? Yeah, he goes, yeah, play. Front row. He's like, oh, right, yeah, tight head, loose head. Oh, I can do both. Oh, you'll always get a job, mate. You'll always get a job.
I love that. Like,
Jono, stop nosing him. He just wants a picture.
Jono, you know, you ask Jono one player about like one thing about rugby or any topic. I remember I once asked him a question, I was talking about DJing and vinyl. 3 hours later, I couldn't get out of the room. He was still talking about his vinyl collection because he's such a bright man. He knows so much about everything.
I said to you, he should do a book. The World According to Jono would be just, it would be like going back in time just to when you said what you thought, everything was
then
practical.
Then he'd be cancelled.
No, because he's clever enough to be able to say what you think within the boundaries, but it was... Yeah.
But there'd be a big picture of people like me with a cross through it, like who he would want to still smash up.
Yes. That's a different book. Hooker. Well, we've taken 15 minutes to work out. We don't know which one plays one or three. So Hooker, we've obviously got Jamie George, we've got Luke Candicke, we have got, just throwing out names here as we go.
I say Cody Taylor.
Yeah.
Cody Taylor.
But Dane, but Cody's taken over really from Dane. Yeah. So I think it has to be New Zealand Hooker.
Because
they are unbelievable.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, if that is a well thought through answer, we could do that.
I mean, this is a let's get through this feature. Right. Well thought out answer.
Well, no, I think Niall Scannell
for Ireland. Is he going with Ireland? Rob Herring.
I mean, I would have Malcolm Marks. You know, could be, but he's faded. Remember?
He's dropped out of the thing.
He's dropped out of the mix, isn't it?
Scannell's not going, so let's not pick him.
If you go through those squads, the Kiwi hookers normally play a very prominent role in matches. You get a lot of work out of them, you get a lot of action
out in the wide channels.
Yeah. Okay. So whichever is
Cody Taylor.
Tighthead.
Tig Furlong.
You could have. That's a very good shout.
He's in form.
I'm still go back. I'm now because we're going to do a very fancy edit. I'm going to go back for my.
Where's three? What?
What?
What do you mean?
We're going back for my Tanelia Tupu.
Tanelia Tupu, good.
Tim's already had that part.
He's
in the first part.
Alan Alatoa.
No, I don't think he's the same.
We haven't got any. What about Augustine Creevy still playing for the Argentinians?
Oh, yes.
And that's Hooker, we're obviously going backwards now. Yeah. Okay, second
row. Great segment, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
Great
segment. Somebody's going to have a lot of fun tidying this crap up.
second row. We've gone Furlong
on the tight head. Kitsoff, Cody Taylor, and Furlong in the front row. That is a good front row. Even if I say so myself. Marrow, obviously.
Yeah,
I'm just throwing out contenders than picking.
Brodie Retallick, obviously.
Brodie Retallick. I think James Ryan with Ireland.
Alan Wynne-Jones from Wales.
Alan Wynne from Wales.
Eden Etzebeth, of course.
Eden Etzebeth, that's, yeah. I mean, yeah.
There's a lot of contenders here, isn't there?
Eden Etzebeth and Brodie Retallick would be a gnarly second row.
Okay. Are you going Brody? Do you want to contend with that? Eben Etzebeth, I think, is probably the best in the world at the moment.
Yeah. And then just for the energy, I'd have Marrow. Just a different...
Okay,
different
rock, paper, scissors, Marrow or Brody? Yeah.
1-2 show. 1-2 show. Fuck's sake.
Marrow. Marrow's in. House Marrow's wins. In.
Right, okay.
Eben Etzebeth and Marrow Toji. Bat row. Now, this could take some time, but let's try and make it a quick game. You can blindside, open side, and then you're 8. Pablo Matera has gone very well for the Crusaders this year.
Yeah, he's got to be in at 6.
Kaelin
Doris at 8.
Yes, and I would say Hooper at 7.
Oh, wow. I was not expecting it to be that quick.
I mean, I would say, Tom Curry's unlucky, but Matera, did you see? I mean, I think he might be left-footed, but that fucking nudge through that he put in that Severis got onto and scored. I sound like a nurse. Got on and scored.
Why are you touching yourself right now?
I don't know. It's so hard. I mean, Severis just, he's unbelievable. But Pablo Matera... I mean, just, I think as well, if you look at the footage and the way that stuff's happened over there, he's become a bit of a folk hero. And so his son was like a team mascot, and he's rolling a porno moustache, and he's massive. I mean, all the things that a man needs. Cute kid.
Very true.
Moustache, skill set, rig. I mean, I don't want a shirt off, but he looks like a present.
Alatau, obviously, back with Wales. Akira Iwani in with the Kiwis, but quite a lot of new faces. Hoskins Satutu's gone well with the Blues.
I mean, Ardie Sevilla again.
Ardie Sevilla's, his ball carrying's been brilliant.
To leave Ardie.
That's what I mean. I know.
But you've got to make big calls in this game. Josh van der Flee has had a sensational season.
I know, he's been. And the thing is, that's why you said, but Kaelin Doris has been so good. I mean, maybe I put Ardie Sevilla, or you can start fill the team on the back row, put him in 9.
Hamish Watson on tour with Scotland.
Oh, fuck, mate. The Mish.
Friend of the show.
Oh,
the
God, Mish. We've offended everyone here.
I'm just throwing out.
You've just got to stick with Sam the first Underhill. Three that came out.
Billy's back with England. Okay, Matera, Hooper, Kaelin Doris. Any debates? Yeah.
Peter Steph to Toy. Oh my God.
Please don't be mean to us. People are punching their laptops in frustration.
We fucked it.
Wales online. Yeah. Good bad rugby league out. All England, all Wales legends.
Haskell says we're shit again. Quote.
Scrum half.
Aaron Smith.
Danny Kerr.
Faf.
Is it? Ireland? Who's? Oh no, the Irish guy.
Gibson Park.
Gibson Park's been great.
Gibson Park.
Gareth Davis ain't too shabby.
Price, Lions starter.
Gareth Davis is great. Who's Argentina?
Thomas Cubelli at nine for Argentina.
This is so hard. Bit of
this is ridiculous.
I'd pick all of you.
A world 15 bar France.
Yeah, I'd pick all of you if I could. If I could fit
we
all
love
of you.
You all. We love everybody you all. Love we love everybody.
Yeah. Ali Price, you're great too.
You're great. Yeah, everyone's great. Ali Price again.
Finlay Christie.
Good looking lad, doing very well.
Very well. Especially in the batting above. Yeah, welcome to the club.
Well, no, he's a dreamy guy, but you know, he's
eyebrows
well.
To die for.
Yeah.
I think your batting average is higher than his, I would say. Can anyone, Thomas Williams, can anyone name a nine that they
Chloe's
like?
Chloe's batting well above her average with me.
Can we do
Faf to Clerk?
Can we still pick DuPont, even though he's playing Japan?
No, he's not going. No, I think he's got summer off.
Count his cash. Oh, he didn't win, though, to lose, did he?
Faf to Clerk, Danny Kerr, Thomas Williams. Can someone name a nine they want? Aaron Smith is a good shout.
I think out of all the ones we've named,
who would you like to be playing behind?
I think
we forgot Jasper Visa for fucking oh my god.
For internationally, I think the one that's best form is Gibson Park actually. Internationally,
okay. Let's do that. Yeah,
I think if you went down club rugby, you'd probably go a different way. But
yeah, Gibson. This is the big stage. Fuck club rugby off. Yeah,
Jameson okay. Gibson Park
10
fly half.
Right. Richie Mwanga,
no debate.
I mean. He's pretty special.
Bowden, we don't know where Bowden's going to play, do we? So Richie Mungo will probably start.
I don't think Bowden's in.
Nicholas Sanchez.
The sort of form that he's been in the past. Just throw it out there, Quay Cooper. Just come back and line up.
Yeah. Quay Cooper would be great. Great to see him back
Marcus
in the mix.
Smith, obviously.
Oh, shit. Marcus Smith.
Young and up and coming.
Yeah, but you're saying Richie Mwanga. If you just, I mean, I just don't think he's on.
Yeah, Richie Mwanga.
I mean, he's filthy. Imagine how much, I always think of him, first thing I think is filthy skill set. And I think the amount of cash a team out in France would pay for him would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
Because I think he's got, I love, Dan Carter's obviously, you know, a seminal talent and a goat. But Richie Mwanga's just general skill set across the park is just filthy.
Yeah, let's go Richie Mwanga.
Okay, go Richie. Let's do centre combination 12. There's obviously a lot of England centres left behind.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Guy Porter, Lester on Kanyoam. Yeah. Very good shout.
Would have to be in there.
Benjamin Erdogan is a 13.
Is Rica only going to play 13?
De La Fuente. Geronimo De La Fuente.
Oh my God.
Who?
Rica only. He's playing 13. Yeah. I don't know.
I think that's a lovely centre combination.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe we just but do you've that. Got
Robbie Henshaw.
He was very good. Owen Farrell,
Gary Ringrose, obviously 13. Farrell at 12.
Yeah,
and back playing
Wales.
Well.
shit, this is so hard. Producer Shara's got a lot to answer for. She'll edit that bit out.
Great, David great game.
At the Crusaders.
Nick Thompson's has ripped up trees for Sarries.
Yeah,
but
we haven't got anyone from Wales in. Do we want to keep Wales online on side or not? Right, 12 and 13. You're going Rico at 13.
I'm going Am and Rico. But are they both 13?
I think Lucanio Am's 13 as well. Yeah. Damien Dialande, is he playing
he's
or not?
He's not in.
He's not in, okay. So that opens up your 12.
You could say Andre Oosterhuizen.
Henshaw, 12. Henshaw's 12. Robbie Henshaw.
Andre Oosterhuizen from Quins. No, he's in.
Very good shout. If this is like a ones to watch team.
Yeah.
Well, no, should we go Andre Oosterhuizen?
We could do whatever we want.
We do what we want, team.
Okay,
so whatever we want.
Andre Oosterhuizen and Rico Ioane. Wingers.
Cheslin, is he in?
Yeah, he's in. So you want Cheslin on the
I just think Cheslin right, has think. To be in, doesn't he? In any team.
Caleb Clark for the Kiwis is an interesting shout.
Rhys Summit.
Not necessarily his peak of his powers at the moment.
No, he's not quite going. Michael Lowry.
Jordan Lama. Mike Lowry. James Lowe.
James Lowe.
Oh, Joe Cocker and a singer.
Joe Thorne singing. That's a hopeful.
That's a hopeful.
One Imhoff. We used to have one Imhoff day because whenever he played for Argentina, he would score.
Well, one Imhoff.
Dwayne van der Merwe of Scotland.
We need to put. Well, listen. We need. I mean,
Samu Karevi. Marika Korobeti.
Yeah, Korobeti good player. Is incredible player.
Okay, Korobeti. Jordan Pataya. Let's go Korobeti.
I think Korobeti. It's gone very Southern Hemisphere all of a sudden.
Always has, isn't it? I mean, we've not we haven't really put any Welsh people or Scottish people.
Well, in all fairness, we haven't put that many English people
we
in.
Yes, that was only
because of rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, so calm down.
I think Korobeti.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you can think of anyone else.
No,
what about Cordera?
Santiago Cordera.
For the other wing.
Yeah. Well, we've got Chez and Colby.
Yeah,
you're going to get rid of it.
Oh, shit.
I think it is Marika Corabetti.
Okay, forget. Yeah, fine.
Oh, 15. God. We're going for an absolute battering.
Hog.
No, he's not touring.
Fuck, well, Scott, he has your chance. I can't, you know, if you're not going to play, I can't work with you. Liam Williams?
Fullback.
I want Mike Lowry.
Mike Lowry. Hugo Keenan's gone well.
Hugo Keenan's gone well.
Yes, Hugo Keenan has gone well.
Freddie Stewart?
Mate, Freddie Stewart.
Freddie Stewart.
He might well end up playing on the wing, though.
Well,
we can pick him where we like. Freddie Stewart's not a bad shout. Is he the most exciting 15 on offer this summer?
No, he's not, but he's very, very solid.
Your mate Andrew Kellaway.
Kells, yeah, fucking hell, he's a good player.
He's a good player.
He's a very good-looking redhead.
Yes.
Very dreamy.
Should we end it as we began?
Yeah. Bookend it with a gin, coloured rangers.
Liam Williams.
Liam Williams.
I said Liam Williams.
Shout.
What about...
He's got a score to settle after... summer.
Who's that? Who's will be fullback for
Argentina?
For New Zealand. Oh, jeez, I've just seen
Jordy Barrett.
I've just seen Roger Tuivasa-Sheck is.
Yeah.
And Damien Dundee is in there.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. Who is going to play fullback for SA?
For SA, it'll be Willie. Is Willie in?
I'd put.
I'm looking. Yeah, Willie is in.
For peace, probably I'd put Liam Williams in.
Damien Willems, sir. But I think it'll be Willie. Willie LaRue. Okay, so Willie LaRue, Jordy Barrett, Liam Williams, Freddie Stewart, Mike Lowry, Hugo Keenan, who played really well in the Six Nations.
Who's guaranteed to play?
Liam Williams.
Yeah, that is true.
You're welcome.
This is what you have to say.
Because actually, Jordy might be bumped for Bowden.
Yeah, Bowden might play.
Uh-huh.
I think it is Liam Williams.
Yeah.
I think it's the only one we can... guarantee he's going to start.
Do we do a bench or just cut it
do you want to do a bench? I kind of need to go home.
Fine.
I think the bench makes us even worse.
Yeah. Go on, let's do a quick fire bench. 16, George. Anyone else? Got to be Jamie George.
Yeah, Jamie George.
British North Line. Replacement loose head, Ellis.
Yeah.
Replacement tight head.
Or an Argentine.
Xander Fagerson.
Yeah, go on then.
Yeah.
Second row, Courtney.
Yeah.
Courtney's got to go, is it?
Johnny Hill?
I
take Courtney. Alan Jones.
Henderson. Alan.
Call it?
Yeah, Alan Jones.
Alan Wynne, the great.
Yeah.
Bat rower, Tom Curry.
Yeah, but he's versatile as well.
Akira Iwani.
Yeah.
Don't just say yes. Ardie Surveyor.
Sorry, Tom.
Tom. 21, scrum half.
Kobus Reinach.
Danny Kerr. Kobus Reinach's a good shout.
Kobus Reinach is a good shout.
I mean, he is.
Look at you coming to the party.
I know, knowledge.
22, fly half, Owen Farrell.
Yeah. Andre Pollard.
Owen's a bit more versatile.
23. Yeah, actually, Pollard's goal kicking wasn't ideal last summer. And your bat threer.
Tuivasa-Sheck.
Roger Tuivasa-Sheck.
Mate, just rascal.
I mean, that's
versatile.
A hell of a
versatile player.
Versatility. Jordan Lama.
Yeah, he was very good, yeah. We got no Argentina. Oh, no, we have Patera. Sorry. All right, well done.
Who's your 23?
Oh, we said Tuivasa-Sheck.
Tuivasa-Sheck, just as a wild card.
Yeah.
Okay, are we ready?
Yeah, read it.
Right. With apologies to all international rugby union players this summer,
and absolutely no science behind this
in any way, shape or form, our ones to watch 15 over the course of the four internationals on Sky this weekend are... Stephen Kitsoff on the loose head, Cody Taylor at hooker, Tig Furlong on the tight head, Eben Etzebeth and Mara Toji in the row, Matera Hooper, Doris as a barrow. That is a tasty pack, whatever way you look at it. Can you stop packing up before I've actually done it? It's not the end of your lesson. Sit down and get your homework out. Jamison Gibson-Park at 9, Richie Mwanga at 10, centres are Andre Esterhazen and Rico Iwani, power and pace, Marika Corabetti, Cheslin Colby, and Liam Williams as your 15. George Ellis, Fagerson, Alan Wynne, Ardie Surveyor, Kobus Reinach, Owen Farrell, and Roger Tuivasa-Sheck as your bench. If nothing else, we have pissed our entire leadership off and given you all something to debate. But I think what it's fair to say is there is a lot to look forward to this summer. Just before we go, I know you hate predictions, but we're going to do it anyway. The winner of the series between Australia and England will be who by what?
England have to win this series. So I think they'll win, and I think they'll win 2-1.
I agree, 2-1.
New Zealand, Ireland.
Ireland, 2-1. This is their best chance to do it.
Okay, Ireland.
You don't just have to follow
him. No, because he makes
jump off
point.
A cliff, great, I'll do that too.
Yeah, I would. You know, with the team.
I think New Zealand are vulnerable at the moment for the first time in a long time.
Right, so we have picked a team of Southern Hemisphere players.
Yeah.
And we've just gone Ireland to win in New Zealand and England to win in Australia.
Yeah.
Right. So some of the parts.
Yeah, but individuals. Yeah.
Individuals, yeah.
Okay, South Africa, Wales.
I think South Africa win that.
Yeah,
3-0.
Argentina.
I think 2-1, South Africa.
Interesting in Argentina against Scotland. Checker at the helm of Las Pumas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who wins that?
Argentina against who, sorry?
Scotland.
Scotland. We've just asked that after we've just gone through
it. All knowledge.
I think Argentina win that.
Ireland, England, South Africa, Argentina. You heard it here first. Bet against.
What did we just choose? Sorry, say that again. England.
Ireland.
England.
Ireland, England, yeah. South Africa, Argentina. I think it might well be 4 Southern Hemisphere wins.
How can you say that?
How can
because
you
I don't
when
think
they
England,
all got beat when they came over it.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a very different...
You are so negative.
Yeah.
Oh, it's in the subcontinent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, no, it's not the subcontinent, that's cricket, but you know what I mean.
Southern Hemisphere.
So the equator, darling.
Good luck to all involved. I hope your confidence has been shattered by being omitted from our very unscientific selection 15. Just before we finish, we have got a little note from Honda on the pod this week, who are the official performance partner of England Rugby, who are bringing the power of dreams to the game that we all love. Honda are playing a big role with the volunteers in the English game. They understand how the England fans feel about their sport and their team, the supporters' relationship with Eddie Jones' men, their achievements, the hopes, and those who dream the impossible dreams. Honda believes in a challenging spirit, embracing failure, and in the joy of trying things. And just like England Rugby and their supporters, Honda believes in the power of dreams. You can find out more at www.honda.co.uk/engine room/England Rugby. Go and have a look. And as we said, good luck to all involved. We will see you next week. The show is produced by Shara Kilgallen. The Good, the Bad and the Rugby is a Folding Pocket production. Enjoy the rugby. Look after yourselves. Bye for now.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, the Bad and the Rugby. It can't have been easy.